Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. All right, Montana, we've long been called Big Sky Country, and no doubt about that. In fact, we appreciated that big sky with that big solar storm and the northern lights just the other day. It was beautiful. But underneath this big sky, there are some pretty cool fossils, scientifically important fossils, as a matter of fact. With this one that we'll talk about today dates back to 2006. The dueling dinosaurs, we had some information on that. There's been some new information out about it. There was this dueling dinosaurs, Triceratops, and then what they believed was maybe a Tyrannosaurus rex, actually. Just a separate species, not a baby T-Rex. We will find out more about that today as we go dino digging with the dino cowboy, Clayton Phipps, today on Voices of Montana. Let's just welcome our guest and get on to it here. Clayton Phipps is with us, the dino cowboy, lifelong Montana rancher from Garfield County. He's become one of the most recognized private fossil hunters in the world. And then, of course, that black Stetson. And then I think a lot of people appreciate that no-nonsense cowboy attitude as well. Good morning, Clayton. How you doing, sir?
Morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks.
Enjoy your show, and it's a pleasure to be on here.
You're kind to say so, and thank you for being here. And I appreciate your work. I mean, this is super fun stuff. I'm going to get right to the top. Peter Larson may be joining us as well. That's Peter there? Okay, great. Wasn't sure if he was going to be able to make it right at 9:06, but Peter Larson is president of Black Hills Institute of Geological Research. He's a world-renowned paleontologist himself, author, and fossil expert. And then he founded this, actually, this institute, the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research, back in 1974, and it is in Hill City, South Dakota. Peter Larson, Dr. Peter Larson, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. It's just Pete. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. Appreciate that. No agenda here, so you and Clayton, feel free to just talk about dinos like you guys always do, and we'll be a fly on the wall. Because that's, I think, a great experience. We'll start off, though, with the recent discovery, Clayton. I kind of hit on it a little bit, this dueling dinosaur discovery, huge in itself, back in 2006, two well-preserved, almost perfectly preserved dinosaurs in battle. Talk about that, and then how that led to, what is it now, 2006, 19 years later, even more fossil discoveries.
Well, yeah, a couple of friends and I went out in June of 2006 and dinosaur hunting, and we happened to find a pelvis weathering out of the hill to the Ceratopsian, and we had no idea there were two dinosaurs at the time. And anyway, we kind of made plans to maybe go back and work on it, and we contacted the landowners and made an agreement. And about 2 weeks into it, we had this Ceratopsian dinosaur completely laid out. And, I mean, that was world-class on its own because finding a full, complete dinosaur is very, very hard to do.
Yeah.
Normally, you find one bone because the other half's already weathered away before you find it. And skeletons are notoriously scattered by wind, rain, scavenging. And then natural erosion washes them back out so you can find them. They have to be buried. A skeleton has to be buried quick. So natural weathering or erosion is our best friend and worst enemy. It exposes them so we can find them. Also destroys them if you're not collected right away. So there's a short window of time usually to find a good dinosaur or a good fossil of any kind before it just turns back to dust. So I like to tell people I save them from the second extinction, natural erosion. They've already went extinct, but we're saving them again.
That's great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Peter, go ahead and weigh in there because I know that you have also discovered almost a complete Tyrannosaurus rex as well.
Or two.
Well, so Clayton is a very magical person. He has found... He has found, made more discoveries than any other paleontologist that I know.
Wow.
From the Hell Creek Formation. And I kind of call him magic because where Clayton goes, he goes where the dinosaurs went and he finds them. And
well, thanks,
and not only that, but he is magic in the way that he's able to excavate them, and he does a better job than anybody else I know. He's just a very, very wonderful digger, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He does a good job. He documents it as he's taking these dinosaurs out, and he has literally found probably the most important discovery, the dueling dinosaurs, of this last century in paleontology. And there's two dinosaurs buried together that died together, literally killed each other, and we think that they were actually the only reason they're preserved as well as they are, because most time these carcasses get scavenged, is that it looks to be preserved in a seismite, which means that they were literally killed each other and maybe even still partially alive, at least the Ceratopsian, the Triceratops. And then they were sucked down because there's an earthquake occurred, and the sandbar that they were found on liquefied because it was filled with water as this earthquake happened, and they were literally sucked down into the sand. And so we have them preserved literally at the moments of their death, and just fantastic discovery.
Wow. What's the magic behind that, Clayton? I mean, I know you probably know your area pretty well, the Hell Creek Formation, and maybe talk about that a little bit too, because then Dr. Larson or Pete, I want to have you talk about the Black Hills Institute. But first, Clayton, what's the deal with the magic?
Well, Lex created. I never found a dinosaur sitting on the couch, Tom.
Oh, I see.
You got to get out there and look. And thank you, Peter, for those kind words. You're kind of the king of paleontology in my book. You've been doing this longer and more passionate about it than anybody on the planet. Your knowledge of T-Rex and your willingness to share that knowledge have certainly helped me out a lot over the years.
Well, talk about what you do in the Hell Creek Formation or how you pick up the scent of a dinosaur, so to speak.
Well, there's no roadmap to them. Tom, I've actually hiked in four different states, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wyoming, and on probably hundreds of ranches at this point, and it's not always easy. I've only managed to write about three good landowner checks, so I find them and make a contract with the landowner and excavate them and then try to find a home for them, whether that's museum or private collection. And we try to market most of the scientifically important specimens to universities and academia first. It doesn't always work. Committees have to agree that they're going to spend the money on what we have to offer. And it may not be something that a museum is interested in. It really varies on that note. As far as finding them goes, it's just a lot of hiking. There's no technology yet that will find a dinosaur. I've thought about using drones, and you could pick out the ones that have blown up and, you know, eroded out, and there's a big rubble pile. You can see those, but the little ones that just have a tiny piece of bone starting to weather out, you're going to miss them with a drone. So mm-hmm. Eyes on the ground really is the only way to really go about finding one just yet.
Yeah, and I guess there's something, you know, Dr. Larson or Pete Larson again, there's something right about that, you know, and maybe that's that whole Dino Cowboy persona as well helps in that regard. Talk about the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research, and then get into, you know, the contribution to paleontology from these private paleontologists.
Well, so we work like Clayton. We work on private land, and sometimes we work with Clayton. Sometimes we work on our own. But we've been fortunate enough to discover probably the two most famous T-Rexes, Sue and Stan, and excavated them. And they're both in museums now. One's going to just open here shortly, the end of this month, and the other one is at the Chicago Field Museum. We've also dug on 13, 14 Rexes. I'm kind of losing count at this point. T-Rex is one of my favorite dinosaurs, and then we got involved in this whole controversy of Nanotyrannus way, way back in 2001 when I helped dig up Jane. The Nanotyrannus sits at the Burpee Museum in Illinois. So I've been very fortunate to have been involved in a lot of real cool fossil discoveries, and fortunately we have good relationships with the ranchers like Clayton does, and so we're called a lot of times to when somebody finds something, and 9 times out of 10 it doesn't turn out to be much, but you got to go look because the ranchers have eyes to the ground, like Clayton is saying, and they're the ones who quite often make these discoveries.
Peter Larson, Dr. Pete Larson, President Black Hills Institute of Geological Research, and Clayton Phipps, the Dino Cowboy, with us here. We're talking about these dueling dinosaurs, but let's go into Clayton, and then I'll have you follow up, Pete. The significance here recently of a paper that, I don't know, does that verify your theory many years ago that all these small baby T-Rex teeth, maybe not all of them, but were not actually from a baby T-Rex. They were from a nano Tyrannosaurus. Is that now accepted science?
Yeah, I think the debate finally put to bed. So I think back in about 40s, I think a skull was found and kind of tossed around as whether it was a baby T-Rex or maybe a Gorgosaur or something different, and no one knew for sure. And then I think it was in 1988 that Dr. Robert Bakker and Phil Curry and a fellow named Williams, I can't remember his first name, on Nanotyrannus, and that it was a different species, a pygmy Tyrannosaurus rex, not a T-Rex, not a baby T-Rex. And so it's been a kind of a hotly debated issue since then. And when I got into dinosaurs, I guess it was probably in the late, I became aware of that controversy, and based on the fossils I had found at that point, when I kind of became aware of it, I was certainly in the nano camp. I'd found baby T-Rex teeth. The teeth are very different. The teeth of a Nanotyrannus are very blade-like, and the teeth of a T-Rex shaped like a banana. They're just big, beefy, strong teeth, and not at all like a nanotooth. And I'd found baby teeth with the, and also the serrations are different on a Nanotyrannus tooth versus a T-Rex tooth. Per inch on a Nanotyrannus tooth than there is a T-Rex tooth. The denticles, the little serrations, are bigger on a T-Rex tooth. So I found baby T-Rex teeth that were certainly big serrated little teeth that definitely didn't go to a nano. Not many baby T-Rex fossils have ever been found. I actually have a jaw of one, I believe, a partial jaw. I think there's another, and there's a few fragments of a baby T-Rex, but they're very, very scarce. And that's why people, somehow thought that Nanotyrannus was probably grew into a T-Rex, because we just weren't finding baby T-Rex fossils. But have a lot of growing to do, and they probably got eaten if they got killed. There's not much to a baby, of course. I guess that's why there's probably not as many fossils. Young survive, I suppose, too.
Go ahead, Pete.
And one of the things that people forget when they're saying, well, there's got to be baby T-Rexes, so it must be Nanotyrannus. What they forget is baby dinosaurs are super rare, rare. I don't care what species. They're always super rare because if they die at a young age, it's usually they were killed, and once they're killed, they're eaten. They don't just die. But if you die of old age, you might not get eaten, or at least not entirely eaten. Plus, smaller dinosaurs are also very rare to find a decent skeleton in the Hell Creek Formation. Because
a lot harder to find a little one than a big one.
Yeah, much harder, much, much harder. So even the smaller dinosaurs, we know, that, for instance, there's by single bones here and there, we know there's at least a dozen species that have not got a name yet in the Hell Creek Formation. And so small dinosaurs, and especially baby dinosaurs, are super rare. So just because we didn't find any baby T-Rexes doesn't mean that that some other dinosaur is a young T-Rex. So that was just kind of silly argument.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that as well. I mean, that was one of my questions out of curiosity. How many baby dinosaur fossils do we find? We'll be back and talk about the significance, though, of this new discovery and a new species of dinosaurs out there as well. Clayton Phipps is with us, and Dr. Peter Larson as well. So we're talking about some dino discoveries, the Hell Creek Formation. There's parts of Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. And it dates back. There's just been a ton of fun finding fossils in this Hell Creek Formation. The nano Tyrannosaurus, as we're talking about here, recently it picked up a lot of steam in terms of it being a newfound species. It's kind of been like the planet Pluto. Was it a planet? Yes, it's a planet. And then some say, no, it's not a planet. So then it's not a planet. And then now it's a planet. That's kind of the case with the Nana. We'll talk about how important that discovery is. And there's more discoveries to talk about as well. Clayton Phipps is P-H-I-P-P-S. Just go to the Facebook page. A lot of fun stuff there. And also Dr. Peter Larson with us, the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research, B-H-I-G-R. Clayton and Peter, thank you again for being here. Appreciate that. What's the magnitude of? Of course, you go back, and it took like that almost 20 years to find that home, so to speak, North Carolina Museum of Natural Science, and then some groundbreaking papers regarding us. Go ahead and catch us up today.
It started off with Gorgosaurus lancensis being described in 1946, redescribed under a new genus by Bakker et al. In 1988. As Nanotranus lancensis. And now this new paper recognizes that Nanotranus lancensis is indeed a valid species, but it also then said there's a second species of Nanotranus that I don't remember the name they gave it right offhand, but but so there's even two species of Nanotranus, which is... I think that's probably valid as well. Just looking, there's at least a couple characters that look to be unique that separate out that second species. So it's been a long battle. We've been, Dr. Robert Bakker was very good in defending his designation and creating that new genus, and he was, correct. And then in 2001, there was a nice, because all we had before was a skull. Then there was this wonderful partial skeleton discovered that I actually helped excavate back in 2001 by the Burpee Museum. And to me, that answered the question. There was, you can't, not only were the teeth a problem, not only the shape of the teeth and the morphology and how they fit into the skulls, but the number of teeth. Nanotranus has about 5% more teeth than a T-Rex does. And there's no animal that loses in that we see either in the fossil record or today that loses tooth positions as it gets older, except through pathology. Humans have their wisdom teeth pulled, so an adult human has fewer teeth than perhaps a young adult does. But that's something completely different than what was happening here. And there's this big debate, and to me it was ridiculous because there's so many characters that separated Nanotyrannus from Tyrannosaurus that the proponents of this just wouldn't give up, and it became this political battle almost. And so finally now we have more accepted people from the scientific spectrum. Because I, and you call me doctor, but I haven't actually been able to finish my doctorate. So I'm not really a doctor, but I've been studying Tyrannosaurus Rex for almost 50 years now. And so there's, I've seen just about every specimen that's been collected. And to me, that was a no-brainer. And so I'd go to conferences waving my arms. Sometimes they're actually arms of, of a Nanotyrannus and a T-Rex saying, how can you possibly say that this animal is going to grow as he grows up, get smaller arms? It makes no sense.
Oh yeah.
And this is very, very, very nice now to have been vindicated after all this time since 2001 when I began this argument.
What does that do for the scientific community?
Well, I think it helps us recognize that scientists are human too. We all make mistakes. I've made mistakes in some of my papers and things, and I was glad to be corrected, because what we're supposed to be doing is trying to find the answer to things, not just supporting our ideas. Having an idea is great. You have a hypothesis and you try to supposedly to falsify that hypothesis, but people have a tendency to defend the hypothesis instead of trying to look to see if they're wrong. And because I don't have my doctorate, and because I also we supply museums with fossils from museums all over the world, so I sell fossils too, and so that puts me in a position kind of like Clayton, where we are kind of under-recognized and under suspicion, if you will, of motives. But it didn't make any sense for people who sell fossils to say nanotranis teeth are something different, because they don't sell for even a tenth the price of a T-Rex tooth. So it didn't make, anyway, it was kind of a silly argument, but we're glad we're on the other side of it now.
Yeah, Clayton, you know, the dynamics of that argument were some conflict between, as Pete's pointing out there, the academic side and then in the commercial side of things. And but that's, this kind of smooths that over a little bit?
Well, Tom, you know, when we found the dueling dinosaurs, I thought this is going to change things. I really did. I thought, you know, this is too big of a discovery for them to sweep us under the rug. It's going to bridge the gap here a little bit. And that's what I've always tried to do, is bridge that gap between academics and commercial paleontologists and ranchers that own the fossils. You know, it seems like there's a place for all of us and even a contribution to science once in a while. And so at any rate, my hope was always that it would bridge that gap. And it's been a frustrating ride, but it's getting better. You know, there was one guy out there, and I won't, but he based his life's work on Nanotyrannus being a baby T-Rex. You know, he was in the baby T-Rex side, and his life's work is in shambles right now because of our discovery. But he wasn't going to quit. He quit no matter how many good ones I found, he wasn't going to give up. And it's like Pete said, we try to, you know, sometimes we're wrong. And I've been wrong lots of times in my life. I'm the first one to admit it. But at any rate, I'm glad it's behind us. Yes, it's nice to be vindicated, I guess. But, you know, it was a silly argument, like Pete said from the beginning. Cowboy logic tells you that they are not the same. I'm glad it's behind us. And yes, I hope we can continue to make new discoveries and work with scientists. I mean, that I like to find them so they can study. I do.
Well, and also, I mean, got 2 minutes here before a break. You took extra, you know, really good steps to get this dinosaur out of the ground. I mean, talk about that a little bit. That is probably the most vital part of what you do.
So Clayton he does a better job than almost any scientist that I know of collecting fossils. He does a better job. So I just had to say that before Clayton gets in here.
Yeah, Clayton, that's high praise coming from Pete Larson.
Well, it is, and I think, you know, there's a reason for that. I may not do quite as mapping and different things that they do. I try to do the best I can. I'm not good at that, but I think the reason for that is I've done a lot more of it. You know, I spend all summer out there saving dinosaurs. A museum crew comes out for a few summer and goes on a big expedition and finds dinosaurs. I'm out here all summer saving them, so. So I should be better at it. I'm better at the field, you know, in the field than most crews, because I'm out there a lot more. It's just practice. Practice makes perfect.
I got 30 seconds here. So why don't you just tee this up a little bit, Clayton? You are looking at potentially a new world record for the size of a rooted T-Rex tooth. 20 seconds. What is a rooted T-Rex tooth?
So a rooted T-Rex tooth is a tooth that is slid out of a dead animal's jaw. They shed them continually like sharks, but this one came out of a dead animal's jaw. So a rooted tooth, if you find one, gives you hope there's more of that animal laying around somewhere.
Some of that magic on display, I think, huh, Pete? Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You know, that cowboy grit meets that scientific precision. Where at? Probably not in too many places, but here in Montana, the Hell Creek Formation in paleontology. The dusty canyons of Garfield County have yielded some pretty rich treasures. Not only that, the Hell Creek Formation, as I said, four states, there have been like 75 dinosaur species have been found in Montana. And that makes it a pretty rich hunting ground. I think the Black Hills Institute, Pete Larson is with us here, president of that, has over 300. Is it 350 complete skeletons there, Peter? Tell us a little bit more about your institute.
So we have a museum where we exhibit many of the things that we've collected, but we also do work for other museums all around the world. And we've just now installed three big sauropod dinosaurs in a brand new museum that's going to open up later this month. And I can't tell you about it because they want to make the announcement themselves.
Gotcha.
But so we've worked with the Houston Museum in Texas. We've worked with the Children's Museum in Indianapolis. We've worked with the Denver Museum. We've worked with the L.A. County Museum. We've worked with the Smithsonian. We've worked with the American Museum of Natural History, and basically museums all over the world, not just in this country.
Clayton,
I actually got to work with Pete on a dinosaur that one of the T-Rexes that I helped dig up, and Pete came and helped dig up. Actually went to the Netherlands, so it was the first T-Rex in Europe, the first one that kids in Europe got to go see.
That's really cool. Yeah. And it's a very unique thing, you guys, that you get to do. I don't know how many there are.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We're super lucky. We get to live our dreams.
That's right. And it's not easier. Everybody do it. There's a lot of hard work involved.
He didn't
get to where he is by sitting on the couch either.
Well, and maybe share that, Clayton. I mean, and Pete, the CowboyDinoDigs.com is something that your brother is running in conjunction, I think, with the Sand Creek Cattle Company. There's CKPreparations.com. You guys have embraced it.
We have. My brother does do family digs. You can look at his website, www.CowboyDinoDigs.com. And go on a dinosaur hunt with him if you'd like. He digs in a Hell Creek River channel, and you never know what you're going to find. It is a fun place to go and dig. So if you have a family that wants to go, take your grandkids, whatever. It's a lot of fun. It's a summertime only thing. We can't dig in the winter. The ground freezes, and dinosaurs all go into hibernation. So we have to wait till spring to find another one.
Well, that's okay too, because you're out there. The days are long in summertime, aren't they, Pete?
They are, and you know the paleontology is one of the few fields where even a child can make an important scientific discovery, and we just put out a second edition of our book Bones Rock, that's a kids book, and it talks about the discoveries of kids and tries to teach them how to do paleontology. This is something that can be a family thing. And when I was growing up, I got my family interested in going out collecting too. Most of them liked agates better than fossils, but also some of them still like collecting fossils as well. So it's a family thing that anybody can do. Anybody can make an important discovery in paleontology. And that's not, you can't do it in rocket science, perhaps. Not everybody can be a rocket scientist, but anybody can be a paleontologist.
I like that. And those digs have become popular. I mean, I went on one with family members too. This was the Bishas out of Glendive, Montana. And there's fossils out there. I think every one of us took something fossilized home that we had dug up ourselves. And it doesn't have to be huge and big, but that's amazing in and of itself. I want to get to this topic, Clayton, because, again, you're kind of doing it again. You reported on your Facebook site, Clayton Phipps, and it's P-H-I-P-P-S, find the right one, a potential new record for a rooted T-Rex. Where'd it come from? What's the significance of this?
Well, we found it on Notellum Ridge, Tom.
I know where that's at.
But okay. Well, good. Anyway, it is possibly the very largest rooted T-Rex tooth in the world. We actually have, I think, three of them that fit that bill at this dinosaur site so far. One is still in the left maxilla. I think I have the right and the left largest T-Rex teeth, rooted teeth in the world right now. This T-Rex could be a new world record, or it's possible that it just had a big mouth. I'm not sure yet. I can't just say that it is... What's that?
Oh, I was just going to say that these are, I've seen almost every Rex that's ever been collected, and these are the biggest teeth I've ever seen. By a long ways. There's nothing even made quite 13 inches, and this biggest tooth is 14 and a half inches, I think. Clayton, is that correct?
Yeah, right at that. It's a big one, and the one in the maxilla, I think, is maybe just a little bit longer. The tips wore off of the one that was out. But yeah, they're enormous, and I've got the premaxilla, which is the upper front jaw, covered it and the maxilla so far. We had to put the dinosaur to bed for the winter. We just can't dig in the winter. Your plaster doesn't work and your glue doesn't work, and it isn't much fun being out there in the winter trying to work on a dinosaur. And now I won't sleep till spring wondering what else is in that hill. Got up at 2:30 this morning and started preparing that man, it's looking gorgeous. I wish I could share it on the air with you guys.
I wish you could, too.
And I think that, Clayton, you're absolutely right. It's either something, a really big Rex or a really big mouth, because having that means that those maxillas, those two sockets, are bigger than any other one that that I know of that's been discovered. And so that could mean that you might have the record T-Rex, or at least the biggest mouth anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, we won't know till we can get some, hopefully we'll find some skeletal elements that will measure against other dinosaurs, and we can make that distinction. But it's really too early to say we have the largest T-Rex in the world, but we do have a world record size tooth.
And,
yep, or two.
Yeah, congratulations. And again, like, you know, what's next, right? That's sort of the fun of this in discovery. I want to understand what an excavation site looks like. Again, I'm trying to bring the public because there's more and more interest, obviously, I think, because we're able to more and more get out there and discover the fun ourselves of this kind of discovery. What's an excavation site look like on a day-to-day basis? Clayton or
well,
Pete,
yeah. It's usually hot and dusty, and every single site is different. You know, just because you found a dinosaur doesn't mean it's going to turn into a good one. You really don't know until you're done with the excavation what you might get, and a lot of times you don't know until you've taken it to the lab and opened up the jackets that you collected and see what all's in those jackets. It's very random. I've done probably hundreds of sites at this point over the last 25, 30 years, and only a fraction of those have turned into really good discoveries. It's really random what you find and what you get. Just because you found a dinosaur and there's pieces going in doesn't mean it won't just end, and that's all you get. So will we get more of this T-Rex next spring? I really don't know yet. It's going to be fun and exciting. And so it's slow going once you get down to the layer that they're in, and a lot of times there's a lot of overburden over your site, so you have to come in with big equipment and move that, and that's a lot of expense and gambling, because there may not be more on the hill. I've lost more money on sites than I've probably made if you averaged it out. I've just managed to get in on a couple good discoveries that panned out for me.
Glad to hear that.
Pete. So I think I should mention here that it's finding something anybody can do. Digging it out is not a job that anybody can do. Find something, you need to get a hold of somebody that knows what they're doing to either help you or to take over the dig or whatever, because it is not an easy task, especially in the Hell Creek Formation, to dig a dinosaur, because those bones are broken up into hundreds and thousands of pieces, each individual bone. And if you don't know what you're doing, you can destroy that dinosaur. So if you really want to get into doing dinosaurs, then you need to learn from somebody who knows what they're doing.
You know, and that's why that dueling dinosaur was such a unique and fascinating discovery, Clayton.
That was our biggest project. Actually, we've got bigger jackets now than that.
Ah.
The Nanotyrannus was about 12,000 pounds when we pulled that, and I'd never done a project that big. So we were, everything went well, and we'd done a good job, and we saved that dinosaur.
Pete, how far has
they did
paleontology
super
come?
Job, super job.
How far has paleontology come?
And in some ways, we are still doing the same thing that people did in the 1800s. Hmm. So it is physical labor more than anything else, and having a good eye to be able to spot something and be able to identify what it is. But I think in terms of preparation and, we have much better glues now for collecting things. We have better processes of extracting things, but it's still a lot of what we do in terms of digging is the same process that began back in the 1800s.
Pete, let me ask you this, and Clayton, you can weigh in too. Is there any validity to the potential for finding soft tissue in some of these discoveries that could, it's whatever, movies are made of things like this, but can be cloned. Is there any validity to that science?
Well, we definitely see more soft tissue than we used to, because we recognize it now, and it's more well known. Almost every articulated dinosaur we find now, which means it's laying still like it died, not scattered out. If we find an articulated dinosaur, it almost always has some skin impressions at least, and possibly actual skin. Billions was through at trying to recreate a dinosaur in the 90s, and they failed. Around the world, billionaires put their money together and tried to recreate a dinosaur based on the DNA off of a dinosaur, and they failed. So I think we're safe for a while from Jurassic Park.
Whew, glad to hear that. Pete.
But indeed, finding soft tissue now, because we have better preparation techniques. And, you know, if you, like Clayton says, if you find an articulated dinosaur, the chances of it having skin are like 80%. And but many dinosaurs have been prepared, and they go through that soft tissue without realizing what they're seeing. So we've been very fortunate to have a T-Rex that had some soft tissue preserved. Some of the skin was preserved. That's a T-Rex called Y-Rex, which is at the Houston Museum now. And
that's the only T-Rex skin in the world still.
That's but I think we're going to find more. It's so fine. The texture is so fine on it, just little tiny pebbly scale-looking things. And we only found little tiny patches of it, but I think that the chances of finding more and finding feathers even with the T-Rex, I think the chances we have a chance of doing that. And if you go through and just uncover the bones without paying attention to the matrix as you're going through that in the prep lab, you can miss all sorts of things. So we've also been fortunate to have a really nice triceratops called Lane that's also at the Houston Museum. And that was covered with big patches of skin. And we also just kind of digressing here a little bit, we've also been able to look at soft tissues on other types of fossils by using the chemical changes that occur across the face of a fossil. So you can look at the distribution of elements by using X-ray fluorescence techniques that we're really now finding a lot more soft tissue in fossils than we've ever even thought possible.
That's really cool. How much of the Hell Creek Formation is left to discover, Clayton?
Well, I've been over a lot of it, at least in our part of the world, and like I say, in four different states now. It's not getting easier to find a dinosaur. I know that. I'm getting older.
But every time it rains, every time the wind blows, you have the chance of uncovering a new specimen too. So, and as long as there's sedimentary rock, we're going to be able to find fossils. And the Hell Creek Formation is many, many thousands of square miles. And we, neither Clayton nor I, have been able to cover it all yet. So there's still a lot more dinosaurs out there.
I know. You got a lot of
That's
footsteps
for sure.
to go.
That's true.
Yeah. Hey, Clayton
That's
Phipps,
right.
thank you so much. And Pete Larson, thank you as well. Appreciated the conversation today. Pete's with the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research. Look that up. And Clayton Phipps as well is just Clayton Phipps, the Dino Cowboy. Look him up as well. I think it's a really good, entertaining, and educational. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate that. I look forward to chatting more, and I'll be circling back with you, Clayton, in the springtime. Early spring, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete, too.
Well, thank you so much, Tom.
Yep. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.